Welcome to Polish Jazz Podcasts from PolishJazz.com. For a complete list of our podcasts, along with a Spotify playlist for each episode, please visit PolishJazz.com/podcasts. This podcast series will be about the history of Polish jazz and its most important figures. Each episode will be released with a Spotify playlist that references all the music that we mention in the show. Witamy, or welcome, to all you curious music lovers who have tuned into this podcast. We can't wait to get to know you.
Michał Urbaniak, the Miles Davis of Polish Jazz.
Many jazz fans and critics consider the 1970s the golden era of Polish jazz, and Michał Urbaniak's role and impact of this decade is unprecedented. In order to understand the leap that Polish jazz and Urbaniak made during this decade, we must remember the evolving political atmosphere that shaped the history of Poland.
Rozległy plac budowy Polska zmienia się z każdym dniem.
Mury pną się do góry. Rosną wielkie budowy socjalizmu i nowe osiedla. Po szerokich estakadach mkną lśniące auta. Kraj rośnie w siłę. A ludzie...
The 1970s in Poland's history is often referred to as the propaganda of success decade. During this era, the communist rulers of Poland idealized its economic achievements and created an idealistic mirage where everything appeared to be better than the actual reality. Poland's political powers were concentrated in the hands of Edvard Gierek. Gierek, the first secretary of the Polish Communist Party, or the PZPR, was considered a technocrat and lived for a prolonged period of time in Western Europe. He spoke French, considered a foreign language, and had developed a strong personal relationship with the leaders of both France and Germany. Gierek replaced the authoritarian regime of Władysław Gomułka in December of 1970, after price hikes led to a wave of strikes. He promised economic reform and instituted a program to modernize industry and increase the availability of consumer goods, doing so mostly through foreign loans. His good relations with Western politicians were a catalyst for receiving aid and loans, which translated into more pro-consumer friendly policies from the government and an immediate rise in the standards of living in Poland. Although tightly controlled, some freedom of speech and press were allowed. Previously banned public broadcasted television channels were being opened. For the first time ever, people could watch the reruns of Bonanza and other older American shows, shaping and influencing the Western perspectives of Polish people. Political rhetoric was being dialed down. Coca-Cola and Pepsi were put on the shelves in supermarkets, money poured into these propaganda machines, and some Western-made goods started to become available in stores. Mass production of the Fiat 126, a four-passenger minicar and precursor to the future Cinquecento model, began production in the Bielsko-Biala factory for the first time. Mass consumer products were being made available to the Poles. The little car became a cultural icon and earned the nickname Maluch, meaning the little one or toddler. First highways and modern train stations were built at strategically selected locations so as many people as possible could see them. Then, Western technologies were imported and implemented into Polish factories, all paid on credit, while effectively enhancing the illusion of the economic miracle. Polish vodka, Wybrowia, was conquering all major European countries. By the early 1970s, it constituted over 60% of the total volume of vodka exported into the United Kingdom. By the 1990s, Wybrowia was declared the third best-selling vodka in the world. In 1974, Gierek visited the United States, where he was greeted by President Gerald Ford, further enhancing his liberal image while gaining clout and popularity. This opened the opportunity to access American corn to support freshly built chicken farms in Poland. Ultimately, These farms supplied countless broiled chickens, a novelty for the white meat-hungry Poles. At the same time, the song My Melody of Love by Bobby Vinton was climbing to the top of the charts. 11 years after Bobby's hit, Blue Velvet reached number one on the Billboard Hot 100. Even though Vinton adapted his song from a German Schlager song, he used a refrain that switches between the English and Polish language as a tribute to his Polish heritage. The song was a hit not only in the U.S. and in Poland, but also became the theme song of the Bobby Vinton Show, which ran in Canada. The success of this song led to Vinton's nickname, the Polish Prince. During Poland's rise to popularity, celebrities like Mr. Las Vegas, Wayne Newton, and Oscar-winning Hollywood director Mike Nichols discovered an interest in Arabian horses, especially the Polish Arabian horses, which were noted for their endurance and superior stamina. Well-known country music star Kenny Rogers and others were often seen in Poland at various horse auctions, and the horse business was booming. Momentum was building in the world of soccer when Poland defeated England in 1973 during eliminations to the Soccer World Cup. Enthusiasm was strengthened and spirits soared when in 1974 Poland won a bronze medal after defeating Brazil. Government-fueled propaganda reflected itself in many ways. Even freshly printed school books were distributed to children in Polish schools, presenting Poland as the 10th largest economy in the world. Eventually, all the lies were disclosed as a credit-fueled economy could only sustain itself for so long, and Poland's economic collapse began in the second part of this decade. Until then, though, the Poles were enjoying the ride. Pro-Western government policies of the early 70s benefited Polish jazz. Jazz fans finally had the chance to hear the jazz message from the horse's mouth. The lineup for the 1972 Jazz Jamboree International Festival in Warsaw included American stars of a caliber never before seen in Poland. One of the musical events included Elvin Jones, Charlie Mingus, Cannonball Adderley, Cat Anderson, Ray Brooks, and Jimmy Smith, to name a few. Ironically, some of the reviews of this historic festival were still faithful to the oppressed and familiar drumbeat. Many critics devoted most of their attention to third-rate bands from the Soviet bloc, making them appear as first-class acts, and praising the Russian Oleg Lundstrom band for introducing Russian folk elements to classic swing. Meanwhile, Polish jazz musicians were allowed to travel abroad more freely and were starting to appear on the European jazz scene. Nobody took advantage of this historical opportunity more than Michał Urbaniak, who moved to the States in 1973, becoming the most recognizable Polish jazz musician in the world. Urbaniak was born in Warsaw in 1943, but moved with his family shortly after World War II to the industrial city of Łódź, where he grew up. His family was very entrepreneurial and wealthy, at least by Polish standards, a rarity in Poland those days, and a subject of constant government harassment and social ostracism and envy. He was an independent spirit, very resourceful, and a natural leader from an early age, all qualities that were almost non-existent in communist Poland, where social equality was always prioritized, and a desire for originality and individuality were questioned. Urbaniak started his music education during high school in Łódź, and in 1961 began his studies in Warsaw with Tadeusz Fronski, an accomplished classical music violinist and author of many publications on the technique of violin playing. Being a rebel by heart and in love with American culture, which he acquired from his stepfather, Urbaniak naturally gravitated toward jazz and American music. He learned to play saxophone on his own and soon played in various Polish Dixieland bands. Later on, he began playing with Zbigniew Namysłowski's Jazz Rockers Band, with whom he performed during the Jazz Jamboree Festival in 1961. After his performance, he was invited to play with Andrzej Czajkowski, The Wreckers, the most critically acclaimed modern jazz band in Poland in the early 1960s. From 1962 to 1964, he also worked with Krzysztof Kmita's quintet. With The Wreckers, he toured the United States in 1962, playing at festivals and clubs in Newport, San Francisco, Chicago, Washington, and New York City. According to his autobiography, co-written with Andrzej Makiewicz and published in 2011, he had the chance to see Miles Davis' sextet during his U.S. tour at Black Hawk Club in San Francisco. He had the chance to talk to Miles, resulting in Urbaniak's quote, "Since then, in music and in life, I've always wanted to be like Miles, to move forward, leaving old traditions behind after each new stage, and not on any Polish backwaters, but in America, which soon I have to leave with a pain in my heart and with a firm conviction that sooner or later I would return to it." In the mid-1960s, Urbaniak toured Scandinavia with Komeda's band, and after finishing a couple of contracts, he remained there until 1969, playing almost exclusively on saxophone. When he was in Scandinavia, he created a band with Ursula Dudjak and Wojciech Karolek, which gained considerable success in Sweden, and later on became a starting point for these electric bands in the 1970s. Mikhail Urbaniak's artistic successes would not be possible without the input from his longtime partner and collaborator, Ursula Dudjak. Dudjak started her vocal career upon encouragement from Krzysztof Komeda. Her brother, Leszek, played drums in Komeda's band, and he introduced her to Urbaniak in 1964, and they started recording and touring together. Upon advice from Urbaniak, Dudjak abandoned conventional singing in favor of a wordless vocalizing that's far more adventurous than scat. She's gifted with a remarkable 5-octave range and employed electronic devices to further extend the boundaries of her voice. Besides Urbaniak, she's frequently worked with many leading American musicians, including Archie Shepp, Lester Bowie, and Bobby McFerrin, among many others. In 1969, Urbaniak returned to Poland and to the violin, creating his first electric band, the Mikhail Urbaniak Group, to which he invited, among others, Dudjak, who is now his wife, and pianist Adam Makovich. They recorded their first international albums, Parathypus B, played at many festivals, including the 1971 Montreux Festival in Switzerland, where Urbaniak was awarded Grand Prix for the best soloist and received a scholarship to the Berklee College of Music in Boston. Taking advantage of the offer from Berklee College, which he never used and never attended, and a political thaw in Poland at the beginning of Gierek's decade, Urbaniak and Dudjak chose New York City as their new hometown and moved to the United States. His worldwide career began in 1973 when Columbia published his groundbreaking album, Fusion. In 1976, Urbaniak released his 4th album in the United States named Body English on Arista Records, and his international career went supersonic, cementing his position as one of the leaders of fusion-style jazz with Chick Corea, Return to Forever, Weather Report, and Jean-Luc Ponty. In the same year, 1976, another Polish international brand, Vodka Vibrovia, was served on the Concorde supersonic passenger airliner during its first flight. Urbaniak's career continued during the next decades. The late 1980s and early 1990s were the culminating point in his career. His name was then mentioned numerous times in various categories of important jazz rankings, including the prestigious Downbeat Pools. In 1986, Miles Davis himself invited Urbaniak to take part in the recording session of his album, Tutu. This album was produced by Marcus Miller, who, according to Urbaniak's 2011 autobiography, Me, Urbanator, was discovered and mentored by Urbaniak when Miller was still a teenager in New York City. The legend says that Miles, after hearing Urbaniak's performance on the Johnny Carson show, called legendary producer Tommy LaPulma and demanded, "Tommy, get me that fucking Polish fiddler." So, history was made, and Urbaniak was the first Polish jazz musician who ever played with Miles. Urbaniak's solo track on Don't Lose Your Mind still excites listeners and is one of the high points of the Tutu album. Since the 1990s, Urbaniak's career has been continuing with varying fortunes, but throughout the years of his artistic calling, all elements of his ingenuous personality were always there. Musical eclectics, contemporary articulation, and the influence of Polish folk music all flawlessly incorporated into the vocabulary of Black American jazz. In his compositions, Urbaniak always attempted to integrate the latest trends of world jazz with elements of his personal style, He brings together the original, easy, recognizable sound of his instrument with current musical conventions. Consequently, musicians representing the styles of fusion, soul jazz, funk, hip-hop, and rap appear in his recordings over the next decades, but Urbaniak's explorations, to quote critic Kazimierz Ziz, have never roamed outside the borders of the art form. Urbaniak has continued to hunt after cutting-edge styles, sounds, genres, and technologies, from the jazz rock of the 1970s to the fusion and funk of the 1980s, on to hip-hop in the 1990s, as well as the electronic sounds and movie soundtracks he created in the first decades of the 21st century. Despite different musical genres, he's always found inspiration in his own folk tradition, and at the same time, in creating homogeneous forms of musical expression in a truly unique jazz form. In his continued pursuit for new artistic inspirations and new sounds, Michal Urbaniak's lifetime dream came true. He's as close to the spirit of Miles Davis as any Polish jazz artist could be. This podcast was recorded by the Polish Jazz Network, a coalition of musicians, professional, and jazz enthusiasts. Voice recordings and text editing was done by Marcy Lursky. The text was written by Cezary Lursky. Music is sampled from the various musicians listed above. Piano music in the introduction and conclusion was played by jazz musician Mia Tuchello. All rights to this podcast are reserved by the Polish Jazz Network and PolishJazz.com.
Jazz is the greatest thing American culture ever produced. End of the story for me.